ask some questions, whatever you'd like. Life, love, finances. Yes.
We hear lots of preaching that we cannot fulfill material desires, but also at the same time we understand we have vanity from Dharma.
Yes. Varnashram Dharma is a scientifically arranged social system so that you can realize you can't fulfill material desires in a progressive way that will not damage you. Whereas life without Varnashram Dharma is not human life. Life without Varnashram Dharma means you try to fulfill your desires, you fail, and you never learn the reason why. Varnashram Dharma is in connection with Vishnu. So while you're expressing your tendencies, you're getting purified. That's the big difference. But on you, simply material desires, they cannot be fulfilled. Not possible. Remember, what's his name? Sovari Muni. He was meditating under the water for so long, performing severe austerities and penances. And while doing his yoga, he became agitated by seeing some fish mating. So he came out of the water and went to see the king in order to marry. He thought that, well, I'm a great mystic yogi. Certainly the king will hand over some of his daughters to me, without a doubt. The king, being a Kshatriya, was very diplomatic, and he said, oh, you want to marry my daughter as well? Whichever one of my daughters wants to marry you, let her marry you. That was his way of saying no, because the yogi looked like he had been meditating underwater for thousands of years. And he probably smelled like it too. You'll find this in the ninth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. You got up to the ninth canto yet? So, the yogi was very insulted that the king wouldn't just hand over his daughters. Therefore, the yogi went away, and with his mystic power, he had accumulated mystic power for so long, so he had quite some potency built up. He used that potency to transform himself into a devastatingly handsome young man. And then he went back to the palace. And the king took one look at him and just pointed to the door of the daughter's quarters and said, step right in. And he walked into the daughter's quarters and immediately they were fighting over him. He's meant for me. He's not meant for you. No. He's mine. He's not good for you. So all 50 of the king's daughters were fighting over him. So finally, Sovari Muni, he married all of them. And then with his mystic power, he constructed a palace, he manifested servants, furniture, food, all the luxuries, just by his mystic power. So naturally people today will say, oh, that's mythology, because they can't do it, so it's mythology. So he tried to enjoy himself with all this opulence, with all these wives. And then one day he went off to a secluded place and began to contemplate his history. He said, just see how I've fallen. I've used my accumulated mystic power just to create facilities for sense gratification. And he began to reflect. I've been trying to fulfill my desires for so long, but it's not possible. That was his dramatic conclusion. It's not possible to fulfill material desires. So then he took up detachment, and his wives also followed his path. That way he resolved the whole affair. Remember Prabhupada's definition of lust in a purport earlier in the chapter that we're studying in the morning. Lust refers to desires which cannot be fulfilled. Material desires cannot be fulfilled. Only Krishna satisfies. Material desires lead you to further interaction with the modes of nature. It is not the business of the material world to satisfy you. You have to get that point through your head. The business of material energy is to lead you on and seemingly offer satisfaction while always leaving you unsatisfied. The quicker you realize that, the better. Now, Krishna is very compassionate for those who cannot immediately transcend, so to speak. Krishna has given a material system for organizing material desires and propensities so that you can actually deal with yourself in a constructive way. You made it. That's Varnashram Dharma. But Varnashram Dharma is not about fulfilling material desires. It's about handling material desires so that you can make advancement. Because somehow or other, in spite of your material desires, you're connected to Krishna through the system, through the social system. So it's not about fulfilling, it's about handling. It allows you to express your material attachments in such a way that you gradually become purified because you're part of a social system that's connected to Vishnu.
What do you mean by expressing material?
Well, for example, marriage. You're not the body. Man doesn't need woman, and woman doesn't need man because actually no one's man or woman. But that urge is there. Therefore, how to handle that urge in a way that you don't become degraded. Marriage is an expression of desire. Now, how to handle that desire so that you don't become degraded? The activity is licensed. It's regulated. Give me an example of a desire you think, a material desire you think can be fulfilled. Anyone? But that's not fulfillment. And in fact, haven't you experienced? It seems that you fulfilled temporarily and then it comes back twice as strong. Just like when you scratch an itch. Who gives that example in the seventh canto? No one's read seventh canto. Prahlad Maharaj. Yanmai tunadi griha medi sukami tucham. Kanduyanena kavayo eva dukka dukkam. Tipyanti neha kripana bahu dukkha bhajam. Prahlad Maharaj, at 5 years old, he's giving these realizations. He says that the main happiness of materialistic persons is male-female interaction. And it is very insignificant. Sukham hi tucham. The sukha, this griha sukha, generated by contact between male and female, he said, is very insignificant happiness. Sukham hiducham, certainly very insignificant. Grihamedi sukha. Grihamedi refers to men and women who live together simply for the gratification of their senses and their selfish interests. That is grihamedi sukham hiducham. Kanduyanena kavayo ivadukadukam. It's this Grihamedi Sukha, this so-called happiness experienced by Grihamedis, is exactly like rubbing your hands together to relieve an itch. You all know what it's like to be bitten by a mosquito or a sandfly or something. There's sandflies here. So it starts to itch, and oh no, I'm not going to scratch. I know what will happen if I scratch. It'll just get worse. So you try to tolerate, but then you just think, I know, I'll just scratch once, and that's all. You know what happens after you scratch once? Then the itch redoubles. Well, I'll just scratch two more times. And you scratch two more times, the itch triples. And you finally you start just scratching frantically. You just have a bloody mess on your hand, from so much scratching. So that is Prahlad Maharaj's instruction. He gave that at the age of 5. He said, Kripyanti neha kripana bahu dukkha bhajam. The kripanas, the misers, those who will refuse to use the wealth of their human life, they're never satisfied by this. Kripyanti neha, never. No tripta, no satisfaction, never. And so what does he recommend? Tolerate the itch and avoid so much suffering. Be dira, be sober, tolerate. Not possible. The Bhagavatam also says that just like if you try to put out a fire by pouring drops of oil on it, not possible. The fire simply gets bigger. So we have to do something about this hallucination in which it looks like this material desires can be fulfilled. Not possible. There's only the promise of fulfillment. Any other questions? Hmm?
A lot of people in this, especially my generation, I have such an aversion to accepting authority.
Oh, is that your problem?
most people are speaking my age, they don't want to accept any type of authority, whether it be spiritual, social, anyhow. Just anything that has to do with authority, they reject it.
No, that's not true. They accept their senses. They follow their senses. Very submissively. You must submit. You must come under the influence of something because you are the marginal potency to touch the Shakti. The beach, it's sometimes covered by water, sometimes not. That means sometimes you're under the influence of the spiritual energy, sometimes the material energy, but you must be under the influence of something. What do you call it? DUI, driving under the influence? You have to, as a spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, you have to drive under the influence of one of Krishna's energies. So you take your pick. So you are submitting. You only have the illusion of being independent. That's all. The disease of Kali Yuga is that no one knows how to benefit themselves. These days you can see people can't even benefit themselves materially. Yet they refuse to take any help. Pride and faith in your senses. You think it's a special age group? Maybe, maybe not. It's a question of developing intelligence. If you want to learn something, you need instruction. If you want to learn how to cook, you need instruction, right? They just let you into the kitchen when you do go there. And you just kind of speculate.
Yeah.
Is that the best way to learn? Do you decide what you're going to do every day? If you want to learn anything, you learn from someone. Take instruction. If you want to learn Krishna consciousness, you take instruction. If you want to learn how to cook, you take instruction. Krishna consciousness is an art, it's a science, it's a culture, it's philosophy. So you need help. What verse in the Bhagavad Gita do you find where Krishna says you don't need any help? You don't need any guidance? Do you find where Arjuna tells Krishna, I'll sort this out for myself, just back off? No. Bhagavad Gita is all about taking guidance in a critical situation. You have to decide what your goal is. And obviously to achieve your goal in Krishna consciousness, you need guidance. That's Krishna's system. When you honor Krishna's system, Krishna takes care of you. Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita says there have been problems. He says sometimes the meaning gets lost of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna doesn't hide anything. He's not covering anything up. He says sometimes there are problems. Sakalinaha. What is it? Yoga nashta parantapa. The knowledge of yoga, the purport becomes unclear. Satalinaha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. So when that happens, Krishna says he comes to renovate the whole system. So Krishna doesn't hide the fact that sometimes there are problems teaching Krishna consciousness in the material world. He himself says, sometimes the system breaks down. I have to come personally to renovate it. Again and again, I do that. By taking guidance, you're honoring Krishna's system. And Krishna will take care of you. Even if there's a problem in the system, because you're honoring Krishna's system, Krishna takes care of you. Krishna is the actual teacher. By not taking guidance, by not accepting any authoritative counsel, it means you're actually envious of Krishna. Because the knowledge is coming from Krishna. So that we have to deal with our envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why we don't want to engage in devotional service. That's why we're lethargic, because we're envious. Now suppose we said, we're going to have a big discussion and everyone in the city is invited. We're going to give authoritative, guided information on how to have better sense gratification. Everyone would come. Yes, teach. I am going to teach you how to make more money than you ever could think of. I'm going to teach you how sense gratification will be ever fresh. Yes, teach. We surrender to you. But if I say, come, we will teach how to surrender to Krishna. I'm interested. Any other questions? Ladies, having questions? Yes.
I'm quite new to the conscious movement.
Me too.
Yeah. Wondering about the chanting, how does that help in controlling the senses? As it stands at the moment, I'm fully immersed in the books and thinking about it constantly, but I'm having trouble with the chanting.
I did too in the beginning. You know, I read the books 4 hours a day for 6 months straight before I started chanting. Or associated with devotees. I would get my books from mail order because I thought devotees were weird. I had just finished university and was preparing for a corporate career. But then I got a book, Prabhupada's book, and I read it and then ordered other books through the post, and I would not chant. Reading so many purports, 4 hours a day for 6 months, talking about chanting, I wouldn't do it. I remember finally I had to go to the temple because I had run out of books that I hadn't read before, and I was addicted. I had to have a new Krishna conscious book to read, so I contacted devotees, and they gave me some beads. And so I remember the first time I was chanting, I was laying in bed one Saturday morning, 7 o'clock, and I had these beads, so I said, all right, I'll try a little bit. So I chanted one or two beads. Put it down, that's enough. Then the next day I chanted about 5 beads. And, I don't remember what happened after that. Somehow there just something took off, and I just started chanting more. So I think by the time I moved into the temple, I was chanting 13 rounds a day. So I know what it's like.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to teach it?
Well, you like pleasure, don't you?
Yeah.
And you want relief. That's the first thing you'll feel is relief. By reading, you'll understand why you chant. Some people are like that. They have to know exactly why they're doing something before they do it. I was one of those. Others, they're not so hung up. They just say, you guys look pretty together from your chanting, I'll chant too. But others, they have to have philosophy before they do something. But look at it this way. What will you lose by chanting? Yes. What is so great about you that you'll lose by chanting? Doesn't cost you anything, does it? You invest a little time. I mean, you spent time talking useless things with your friends, right?
Yes.
You regret that?
Yeah.
Right, so take that same amount of time you waste on your friends and invest it in chanting and see where it takes you. Proof of the pudding's in the taste. Suppose it works. You could be in for something, huh? You've got everything to gain and nothing to lose. In material life, you're a loser anyway. So try it. Morning is the best time.
Yeah.
You're working or going to school?
I'm working at the moment.
What hours you work?
usually night shift, radio shift, 1 to 7 in the morning.
Do you have a kind of job where you can chant?
I do actually, and I do chant at work. But as soon as I'm quite quiet, not doing anything through the day, that's when I find it a problem.
Why? You don't want to be alone with yourself?
No, that's not at all. My mind starts wondering about other things, mainly. About what I'm going to explain to my parents about all this practicing preaching to my friends. I'm getting ready for the I'm from Adelaide, so I'm about to go back home.
Adelaide.
And sort of gearing myself up to start preaching to my friends and family. Yet I can't.
Did you explain everything you did to your family first before you did it? So why are you making a big thing about this? Before I do it, I have to explain it to my family. When you participated in various Age of Kali devilish activities, you didn't explain to your family first, did you? Excuse me, Mom, I want to discuss something with you. So Saturday night's coming, and you didn't do that, did you? So why are you putting all these, erecting all these barriers, you know? Just chant. Yes, your mind wanders. You're getting a clear shot at how wild your mind is. But you can tame it. It just takes practice. Make a plan to chant a certain amount each week and increase. You don't have to be as bad as me and start off with 2 beads a day. How much have you done so far?
Chanting?
Mm-hmm.
At any one stage, probably 4 rounds.
Do you think you can do 4 a day for a while?
Yeah.
So why don't you start up at 4 a day, and then maybe what, increase 1 a week or 2 a week or what?
Yeah,
probably. Yeah, okay, 2 a week.
Yeah.
You'll be working in Adelaide too?
Well, I'll be on the flight when I get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got more time. So, you don't go beneath 4, and then every week go up 2. And gradually, your taste will develop for chanting. It's already there, it's just covered over. You like the books, right? So you'll like the chanting, too. The books are the same as chanting, except there's a time for reading and there's a time for chanting. So if you like the books, you like the chanting. The books are recorded chants.
I guess I'm worried that it's going to become a deal. Like everything that I've tried to do that's been good for me, like exercising, I can't bother anymore. So I'm just worried that I'm going to start and I'm going to get really fully into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe after 6 months, whatever.
You'll be what?
Can't be motivated.
No, the living entity is naturally pleasure seeking. So when you actually taste real pleasure, you'll stick with it. Have some faith in yourself that you recognize what pleasure is. You'll recognize what your self-interest is. You don't know what pleasure is before you connect to Krishna consciousness. But you're reading the books, that means you'll be educated enough to recognize what is pleasure. And pleasure is Krishna, the all-attractive. Which books have you read?
First book are The Science of Self-Realization.
Mm-hmm.
And then?
Then
Coming Back.
Mm-hmm.
I've read Back to the
Future. Very good. So from, you like Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah.
Well, after that comes Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm. You have to get a whole set of Srimad Bhagavatam.
I'm actually buying it.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you a secret. The Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, all of Prabhupada's books will be even sweeter when you chant as well as read them. By chanting, you know, the prasad also tastes better. You didn't know that? No one told you that? These are one of the Hare Krishna secrets. The confidential knowledge. Right? When you chant, the prasad starts to taste even better. No one told you that. I'm surprised. Krishna's ever fresh. There's nothing over them. Krishna's name, form, qualities, pastimes, everything associated with Krishna simply increases in freshness. So all these things are in store for you simply by using the golden key of chanting the Maha Mantra. When are you going back to Adelaide?
December.
Mm-hmm. So while you're here, take advantage of the wonderful devotees here. And chant. You'll like it. 3 words, Hare Krishna and Rama. You'll wonder, why am I so attracted to these 3 words? And you're reading, so you're finding all about Krishna and Rama and Mother Hara. Srimati Radharani. So if I could do it, you can. I mean, I was pretty bad, only doing two or three beads a day. I was, you know, as a puffed up, educated person. Material learning can make you very proud. Your education becomes a burden on your head, and you can't submit to the Supreme Lord. Chanaka Pandit, he's a sage of ancient India who offered many maxims than the cobra without a jewel on its head. Now, why do you think that is so? Because when you see a cobra with the jewel on its head, you become fascinated by the fact it has a jewel and you forget it's a deadly cobra. So similarly, material education can be like that. It can disguise the situation, disguise a person, so you don't really see that actually their life is worthless. You just become fascinated by this false jewel of material knowledge they're carrying. So Chanaka Pandit says that. Any other questions?
Is there such a thing as fate, or do we have freedom to choose Krishna?
Yes, you always have freedom to choose Krishna. Krishna does not force you. How can there be the love of Krishna when there's force? That's why you're in the material world. Wrong choice. It's not that Krishna says with a gun in his hand, come here and love me, be happy, chant the holy names. You always have a choice. You're the marginal potency of Krishna. You can choose to take shelter of Krishna or take shelter of Krishna's illusory energy. Love of Krishna means you're making the right choice. You read Bhagavad Gita? So what did Arjuna say at the end of Bhagavad Gita? Yes, he said, Nashta moha smritir lobdha. My illusion is now dispelled. Kadishye vachanam tava. Krishna, I'll act according to what you say. He became Krishna's yes man. In the material world, to be a yes man is considered not very good. It's a derogatory thing to say to somebody, you're a yes man. But to be Krishna's yes man, that is highest position. So Arjuna became Krishna's yes man. Yes, whatever you say. Even in the 10th chapter of the Gita, Arjuna says, Sarvam etavritam manye. Krishna, I totally accept everything you've said. That's the way to understand Bhagavad Gita. Make perfect use of your independence. Yes.
Prasadam is like Krishna, and Krishna's every part of Krishna is complete. It contains all of Krishna's potency. And how is the process of taking prasadam a process? As in, it's gradual, the purification of the intention.
At first, when you're honoring prasad, naturally you want to pack the belly. And gradually you become purified and you realize that it's not necessary to pack the belly to relish the prasad. When you take the prasad, you're honoring Krishna. But in the beginning, you can go for it. But you'll find that gradually, as the days or years go by, you'll realize that it's not the quantity, it's the quality. In fact, you'll become expert at detecting the consciousness of the cook by tasting the prasad. It's a whole heart honoring prasad. That's why we don't take food cooked by non-devotees, because their consciousness goes into the food. Gradually, you can become so sensitive that you can tell when the cook's in Maya just by tasting the food. Those who are cooking have a great responsibility for the temple because they're affecting the consciousness of the whole temple. Ladies, no questions. Yes.
It doesn't seem like a very good system that Krishna set up, because you talk of the material world as a jail.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, if you don't like them, I'm going to put you in jail. It somehow doesn't seem very fair.
Why?
Because,
you don't have to go to jail. Yes, Krishna says, apapyamam navartande mitu samsaravartmani. If you don't want me, you will get something. You'll get mitu samsaravartmani. You'll get the path of repeated birth and death. You belong to Krishna. Krishna makes the system. This is what we don't like. Krishna is in charge, not us. You get the results of your choice. What's wrong with that? It's like you can choose whether to follow the laws of birth or not, right?
It's not very
sure, there are 8,400,000 species of life. Which one do you want? Goldfish, wombat. I went to the zoo when I was in Melbourne. It's quite amazing, you know. If you go to a zoo to see the Bhagavatam purports come to life. Quite amazing. The first creature we came upon was a orangutan. It was Aniruddha and I. So, I remember walking up to the railing and seeing this orangutan. And just the fact that there was a spirit soul in that body. And I just started laughing and laughing and laughing. Just looking, I could see there's a spirit soul in this body. How can it be that the pure spirit soul could take shelter in such a body? And I was laughing and laughing. And finally, the orangutan just reached for a branch, just. They just tossed the branch at us. And we saw the apes. I mean, it's really, until you see it, you know, close up, it's, you don't realize, you know, how powerful a sight it is. All these different types of bodies containing the spirit soul. And you look and you think, I could be that in my next life. Very educational trip to a zoo. You can see there's no difference between what the humans say are doing and what the animals are doing. You can look at the animals and see, especially the primates, the animals that are closer to humans in terms of behavior. The chimpanzees, the mother chimpanzee, she's got her young child, the child's clinging to her. father chimpanzee just laying on a rock in the sun, totally unconcerned. Oh, the mother's there with the little one. Then we looked at the gibbons. Such athletic creatures. Gibbon, he just put on a whole show for us. He was just swinging from vine to vine, just back and forth. No Olympic gymnasts could compare to a gibbon. Anyone ever seen a gibbon before in action? Incredible. Yeah, amazing, aren't they? And they must be double jointed or something.
At 5 times a gripping power of a human.
Then we watched the zebras. What mother here can compare to a zebra mother? Zebra mothers give birth to baby zebras, and in 15 minutes the baby zebra can stand up. And in 1 hour, the baby zebra can run as fast as the adults. Prabhupada explains that every species of life has a chintya shakti, something inconceivable about it. Like birds can fly. Zebras, they have their potency. You can see the sea otters, how they go through the water. More agile than any surfer. So there's plenty of variety for you in material life. Each body of matter is meant for accommodating a particular type of desire. So when you go to the zoo, they have a zoo in Perth?
Yes.
Small one or real? Not as good as Melbourne, so on. So it's quite a meditation if you're going there for that purpose. Just look at those creatures and think, that could be me in my next life. Clearly you can see their spirit soul there. And you think, without Lord Chaitanya, this is what I would be in my next life.
So if some humans are doing quite degraded activities, why do they pick human body in the first place if they're doing basically animalistic activities?
That means they had enough credit in their last life to make it to the human form or to keep their human form, but they're blowing it in this life. Most people today will be going down the animal species. Did you know that when you go down the animal species, it's not that you like become a dog once or become a cat once and that's it? No. You have to become all the types of dogs, all the types of cats. Very great disaster to lose your human form. So if you're smart, you'll calculate. You only have a certain amount of years to live. Organize your life so you can go back to Godhead. If you're smart, you'll do that. Don't just, you know, take every day as it comes. And that's tough not to do here in Perth. We were just discussing that today, Moni Banda and I. And Burjan, for how Perth, you know, people who come here or people who live here, they come or live here for a particular reason. Like, you don't want anybody bugging you. You want to go at your own pace. You don't want anybody on your case. You know, you just want to be left alone. You don't want to get excited about anything. You don't want to accelerate in any kind of way. Those are the kind of persons who can stay in Perth. Yes, Edward. Devotees here they complimented you to me. They said, yeah, I mean, he's from America, but he knows how to live in Perth. Don't raise a sweat about anything. So, even in Perth, you should understand you have to organize your life for going back to Godhead. You don't have that many years. Remember King Muchakunda's statement in the Krishna book. He's giving his autobiography of a sense gratifier. He's speaking to Krishna, describing his life. He said, I forgot about time, but time did not forget about me. At the right moment, time, like a black snake, gobbled me, the mouse, up. So just think about that. I forgot about time, but time did not forget about me. How are you going to use every day of your life for going back to Godhead? How are you going to arrange your life so that you make spiritual advancement? That should be your daily meditation. Some of us need some more purification before the intelligence clears up and we can start thinking like that. At least we should know what the standard is. You cannot abandon your responsibility to yourself, which is to figure out how you're going to get out of material existence. That's your responsibility. And you have to make the best decisions to accomplish that goal. How are you going to get the nourishment and guidance and care so that you'll get out of material existence? That's what Krishna consciousness is all about. Now, some of you here, you are haven't come to that point yet. But you will if you continue. You'll get purified enough so that you can start to squarely face these issues. Others in this room, you've been around long enough so that you can squarely face this issue.
For example, I just started chanting Summa a couple of weeks ago. What would happen if the case I am killed or I die?
You won't die.
No. If I leave my body before time or...
Never happens. No one dies until they want to. Yes, sir.
No, I mean.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Not for me, maybe for another person.
No, I'm just pointing out that everyone thinks that they're not going to die, or that they're going to live a long life. Everyone thinks like that, but death has its own schedule. So you're saying, what happens if you die now?
If I'm not, I didn't realize, so...
If you're not in full Krishna consciousness at the moment of death.
Yes.
Then, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brasta Pajayate. You'll take your birth either in a rich family or a Brahmana family, a family dedicated to studying spiritual knowledge. And if you're very fortunate, you'll take birth in the family of devotees of Krishna.
I'm not planning to die.
No one plans to die. Nevertheless, the mortality rate is 100%.
Unless Krishna, of course, is our life. But you don't know. So we have to be prepared.
Yes, you must be prepared.
Yes.
That is intelligence. Prepare for death. And the best way to prepare for death is to prepare how to live the best life now. How are we going to organize our life so that we make spiritual advancement? All of you should be able to answer that question. I should be able to ask each one of you here, how are you organizing your life so that you'll make spiritual advancement? And you should be able to tell me. That's your responsibility. How are you arranging your life so you get the guidance you need to go back to God? How are you arranging your life so you get the impetus you need to go back to God? You should be able to explain that. Otherwise, you know, you kind of get caught up in the Perth modes and just, you know, take it easy. You know, day comes, night comes. And we need a bit of more energy here. We need to get to a higher gear.
The way to prepare yourself would be chanting.
Everything. Certainly chanting. The whole process of bhakti yoga, that's what you're learning here. That prepares you for death by preparing you for life. You're serving Krishna now, and after death you'll serve Krishna. Now, sometimes, often in fact, we have things we're attached to. You're attached to being an artist. Yes. And yes. Like Damon here, he likes to study. Yes. Yes. Well, you know, he likes intellectual expression. The whole point is, whatever you're doing, you find how to connect it to Krishna. There is a higher level, which is bhakti. That means you're not attached to what you do and you're not attached to the result. Karma yoga means you're attached to acting in a certain way, but you'll give the results to Krishna. Bhakti, there's a subtle difference between karma yoga and bhakti. Bhakti means you're not attached to what you're doing and you're not attached to the results. Many of us, we're doing karma yoga. We're attached to acting in a certain way, but we want to offer the results to Krishna. That will purify you to the point where you can do bhakti yoga. Whatever Krishna wants, how Krishna wants it. Karma yoga means, Krishna, you know, I have these artistic propensities, I have to paint, so let me paint for you. Yes.
So it's not possible to be self-realized through karma yoga.
Karma yoga leads to bhakti yoga. Krishna says in the Gita, whatever you do, do as an offering for me. That's karma yoga. You're connecting your attachments to Krishna. Bhakti, however, means you're not attached to acting in a certain way and you're not attached to the results. Whatever Krishna wants, how Krishna wants it.
Do you have a mix between karma yoga and bhakti yoga?
Well, that's what it's all about for some time, mixtures. So the temple president has to accommodate these endless permutations. And that's why we need guidance to deal with our mixtures in such a way that gradually we become pure. If you're smart, you'll arrange your life so that you get heaps of guidance. If you want to play games, you know, then you make sure that you don't get much guidance. Devotees who are serious, they want as much guidance as possible. Mm-hmm.
And if they're sincere, then the guidance will come. Is that Father Krishna in that way?
Yes, but they have to reach out and get it. When you want something in material life, you go get it, don't you? You have to be greedy in Krishna consciousness. Rupa Goswami says that's the only price tachaloyam ekamamulyam. The only price for Krishna is intense greed. But that's not an ordinary greed. Don't think it's so cheap. You have to become purified to have that kind of greed. Find someone who will inspire you to give up your nonsense. That's the guidance for you. Don't look for guidance. Don't look for a guy the way you, just someone you can keep as a pet. You know? You should want more than a picture on the wall. You should want some active guidance. And you know that you found the guidance for you when it motivates you to give up your nonsense. That's the test. Not that, well, this guidance makes me feel like I'm all right. No, good guidance for you makes you feel like, yeah, I see where I'm at, and I better do something about it. That's successful guidance. So you don't accept guidance just, you know, like a fad. I got a guide, you got a guide. Yeah. No. You accept a guide because you want to give up your nonsense. You don't go to a surgeon because you want him, you know, just to spread talcum powder over you. Why do you go to a surgeon? To cut out the cancer. Lord Kapila Dev describes that the sadhu is one who cuts the knot of material attachment.
At one point in time that someone is serious to cut that attachment, but due to maybe some desires or whatever, they don't follow any instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, it has happened.
Right.
In the movement.
Mm-hmm.
So what should a person do in that situation?
When you backslid, you mean?
Yeah, well, you've gone further than what you thought, you know. Mm-hmm. Where you were at.
Try again. Good guidance will be able to spot where you're at and arrange a progressive path for purification. A good spiritual guide can recognize what your appetite is and work to gradually increase that appetite. Just like here in Perth, you have your bachelor's in waiting program. So this is a merciful facility given by Lord Chaitanya. For those who are, you know, not wanting to, you know, slap on the saffron cloth and be fired up brahmachari, you know, they get the impression that it's all or nothing. You can become a full-on Hari, or no place for you. So now, you and Dave have your bachelor's ashram, and persons can see, yes, this is a good halfway point. I can get into it to some extent without, you know, going over my head. There are many people like that these days. Mm-hmm.
Maharaj, the spiritual master obviously isn't subservient to the pace the disciple or the aspiring disciple wants to move at. So is there a point where the spiritual master, if the disciple is insincere in following his instructions, will they stop instructing, or are they actually...
Yes, because otherwise there's offense. If you disobey, that's offense. So therefore, to stop you from offense, you just don't get any more instruction. Which is not good for you, but it's better than making offenses. find someone who knows where you're at and can get you to give up your nonsense. Then there won't be offenses. It's not a painful process. Being in Maya is painful.
That relationship would have to be a loving relationship for you to.
Isn't love to help cure your disease? Suppose you're dying of cancer, and I come to you and say, "Oh, you're so nice. Oh, you're so good. Well, anyway, let me spread talcum powder over your tumor." Is that the kind of love you want? No, you say, "Hey, why don't you do something? Cure me. I want to die. Get this tumor out of me. Cut it out." No. Let me spread some talcum powder over the tumor. Let me blow on the tumor. That will make it better.
But
love means to help you connect to Krishna. That means to help you detach yourself from material life and attach yourself to Krishna. That's love. That's work, you know. Just hard work. To inspire someone to become healthy and to keep them from getting diseased again, that's a lot of work.